Okay, yes.
And then we go on from there.
Okay, thank you. Right, I want to make a comment on the neighbourhood plan, if you allow me. Following the public consultation in October 2017, I became very concerned that the neighbourhood plan did not regard the whole of Exmouth Seafront as an area worthy of extensive comment, scrutiny and planning. In my view, the neighbourhood plan must make allowances for residents' concerns about the developments and plans that are taking place on the seafront at this moment, and also how those immediate plans will impact upon the seafront in the long term. Policy EE6 in particular is woolly waffle, in my opinion, and will be wide open to misinterpretation by both planners and developers alike in the future. Indeed, it does seem that the neighbourhood plan is about 3 years too late, for had it been in place sooner, perhaps all the parties that have been involved recently may have been spared from the confusion, controversy, poor planning and project management that have been taking place in the last few years in connection with Queen's Drive. The neighbourhood plan must take into account residents' concerns and wishes and produce a long-term strategy to protect the whole of Exmouth Seafront from those inappropriate developments that would radically alter and thereby destroy the unique character that we all enjoy at the present. It is essential that the fundamental features of our seafront, those natural assets of wide open spaces and vistas, not only those that go across the estuary, but also those towards Orcombe Point and the World Heritage Site, are preserved. It is so critical, in my view, that the neighbourhood plan does not allow for any form of residential development to take place on Exmouth Seafront that would fundamentally alter its present character, layout and function. Exmouth Seafront is a unique place located between two internationally designated protected sites. Why are we failing to recognise the need to protect and preserve those features on the seafront which both residents and visitors find so appealing? Finally, why do we not appreciate what we have on our seafront? Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chair. Councillor Pauline Garber will be here, but she's been delayed at home at present, so she will be running a bit late. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Councillor Marty Chapman.
Right, thank you very much. Now I'd like to introduce our guest for this evening, who's going to take us through the programme.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Thank you all for being here. I know it's an additional meeting, but it's a very special moment for Exmouth. I think we'll know by the end of the meeting whether it is as special as I think it is. I think quite a few of you all know that a couple of years ago I raised a warning flag when we were just kicking off on this, that Winchcombe in the Cotswolds was into its fifth year of doing its neighbourhood plan. And I said, I don't think we'll all be around if it's 5 years' time that we reach that stage. We're going to do it within 3 years. We set out to do it within two. We were warned by everybody, including Mark Williamson, who's the leads for the District Council on neighbourhood planning, that it was very ambitious to do it in two. But we think we'll be there in three. I'll go into a bit more detail about the timetabling as I come to the end of these first few opening points I want to make. The point is that with luck and good judgment, we'll get there within the 3 years. But the judgment depends partly on avoiding the kind of problem that a little place in Derbyshire called Swanwick fell into, where at the last minute it was realised that there was disagreement between the neighbourhood steering group, neighbourhood plan steering group, and the district council. And so the neighbourhood plan steering group set about saying, don't approve the plan because it's not what we want. We will not end up in that position, Chairman, I assure you of that. Okay. We will not put it in until we know that there is support from the council. But crucially, that we know that it is truly reflecting the aspirations of the community, because that's the essence of what we've been engaged in over the past 2 to 3 years, is talking with the community in a way I don't think they've been talked to before, simply because it was the requirement that there should be close communication. It's and close and good community engagement, because it is a community-led plan. And we set about that in ways that I think have been described before, and including sort of wacky things like producing the video and using social media and so on, which are all very successful. Tonight's will not be any kind of presentation like that. It's now out of date, that video. We'll produce another one before the referendum. So it isn't a sensible move if we don't get the council fully behind everything we're doing. We've had a challenging time since we had the consultation meeting at the Ocean in September. I think you may all have caught sight of that, and that's the consultation document we put out. I'd underline that was a bonus consultation. Normally, neighbourhood planning groups do not hold that depth of consultation, but we realised because of the size of Exmouth, the nature of Exmouth, and the complexity of the issues that we really needed to go out again before drafting the plan to the point it is at, as you see it tonight. We felt there was a need to go out to make sure we'd actually captured things that everybody was saying, and there are full reports available on the extent of that consultation. Over 400 people attended and engaged in good discussions, and produced something just under 2,000 comments. And that was a challenge to us from the end of September right the way through till now, really, was to go through those consultation responses and to say, how does that change things? Well, it did actually change things significantly, and I do hope it's appreciated throughout the community that this has been a very responsive process, and it's been a very responsive process, and that we've taken on board, we think, in a balanced way, the things that were being said. Inevitably, there were times when particular groups wanted us to work in a different way. We've had to take things in a balanced way, and so far, we get the impression that we have reflected the aspirations, but let's wait and see when we get to the final points. One of the significant differences that occurred was that we realised that a lot of what we were proposing, we had a large, very large number of draft policies, about 70, and that those had to be reduced, because I don't think there's been a neighbourhood plan produced in the country with that many neighbourhood plans, only have 4 or 5 policies in them. We've actually ended up with 26 proposed policies in the plan, which we'll go through in a moment. But what we realised was that much of what was being proposed would be dependent on community actions, would be dependent on Exmouth, led by the town council, led by whatever implementation group is established after the referendum, Exmouth getting behind it and saying, this is the vision, yes, this is what we want to happen. Because there's a lot of very serious issues that we're proposing to be addressed through the community actions rather than through policies that go through the district council. What you have before you, Chairman, is the text that we will be using from now on. Eventually, before the referendum, there will be a similar glossy version produced with photographs as well as maps and so on, but we decided that the crucial thing now is that people really get inside what the wording is and say yes or no, we agree or we don't agree with it. We will also produce a management summary, because there are a lot of people who don't really want to get into the detail, but to get a good picture of what is happening or what's proposed. What I suggest, Chairman, is that we go through the draft plan chapter by chapter, and there are six of them, plus the introduction. Quite briefly, we can go at whatever speed suits the committee. But the thing I'd want to underline at the beginning is that as a result of the consultations we've had about how we manage the final steps, which are the pre-submission consultation, ensuring that it's legally sound and all that, that will take a lot longer than we had anticipated, some 2 or 3 months longer. The most recent thing we were saying to you was that we hoped to go to the referendum in April or May. When we did those, the detailed planning for how we bring the plan together, finally, we realised that the date when we would be going to the referendum would be August, which is not the best time to, in a place like Exmouth, to go to consultation. And we realised also that we need a good month before the consultation to give people the chance to understand what it is we're trying to do in order that we can maximise the vote and the turnout for the vote and hopefully maximise the vote in favour. So we're ending up with the referendum, all being well, taking place in October. We'll need September for the sort of warm-up period, you might call it, and then so we can get the maximum turnout, and then the referendum to take place sometime in October. What we have to do between now and then is to publish whatever is agreed finally here, publish the plan for the pre-submission consultation. Now, that's a statutory requirement for organisations like Historic England, the environment agencies, Devon County Council, local parish, neighbouring parish councils, all people like that, to actually, for us to be able to demonstrate to the inspector that they have been formally consulted. It's also an opportunity for anybody who still feels seriously about the issue to respond in their own way. There's a six-week consultation period that will take place in February and March. We hope to have all the comments back by the end of March, and that's when the thing gets very tight in terms of the procedures. They call it the audit process that we'll have to go through to demonstrate to the inspector, who will finally decide whether our plan is fit to go for referendum. The inspector will have to decide whether it is a sound plan and whether we have responded satisfactorily, conscientiously is the word they use, to comments made during the pre-submission consultation. So that's that period. We do at the same time have a process which is called a sort of health check, which is where we appoint somebody who's seen a lot of these neighbourhood plans, and he or she will get them to look at it and will say whether it matches up and whether it could be improved. And so it's good quality planning. We put it formally to the with supporting documents to the district council, probably sometime in early May, which then leads on to the process. When it gets to the district council, it has to move backwards and forwards between planning officers and cabinet to see that it is legal. I think at that point, Chairman, I want to underline the significance of the local plan. We have the local plan that runs through to 2031. This is, when approved, we trust, this will then sit alongside the local plan, complementary to it. It cannot contradict things, agreements that are made in the local plan. Anything that is already agreed policy, you cannot just say, no, we don't agree with that policy. It'll be struck out by the inspector before it went to referendum if we did that. But we believe that it will produce a vision, which is the vision of the Exmouth community, which will carry forward for 13 years, sitting alongside the until the new local plan comes into play in 2031. And obviously before that time, there will be a review of the neighbourhood plan to see what improvements need to be made. But it does mean that in the next 10 years, there's the opportunity for the town council, with the support of the kind of energies that you've seen around in the community, getting behind the neighbourhood plan to get it to the stage it's reached, that there will be the opportunity for the town council to lead into significant developments which reflect the aspirations of the town and of the community. That's the intention of the neighbourhood plan, and that's where it's worked to good effect in quite a few places. So, Chairman, I'll answer any questions about the general thing, maybe, if there are any points I've made so far before we get into the details.
Do we have any questions? Pauline?
Can I just say that it is right that anything that has had planning already, we can't go back on. We can only go forward. Is that correct, Roy?
Brian?
I take it that as this is community-led, it's churlish of us to try to turn things round. So I think what we could do is just make suggestions and hope that you take them on board rather than be at all dictatorial in our attitude.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chairman. Rather you weren't dictatorial. I know what that feels like. I've worked in places like that. Yes, it would be very helpful to have any kind of commentary that helps us to improve the papers. We've reported monthly to the council, and I did a presentation, so I hope there's nothing here that comes as too much of a surprise, but I'm perfectly happy, obviously, to take on board and then go back to the steering group to say we should be listening to this point, we should be amending in whatever way, if it's serious enough. Thank you.
Can I personally say a big thank you to Roy and the team for drawing up this neighbourhood plan? I'm sure it hasn't been easy. There's been a lot of hard work and a lot of meetings. And can I say, I did attend the session at the Ocean, and I was extremely impressed with the number of people that actually turned out, and amazed by the amount of comments that you got. So I'd just like to say congratulations to you and all your team.
Thank you very much, Chair. Yeah, I just wanted to ask Roy, you mentioned the word balance in your introduction, and certainly one of the things I've felt about the town is that we need a sense of balance between ages, balance between occupations, balance between environmental, employment and economic and social aims. It would worry me a lot if we were going down any path which might lead to being a niche town or anything of that sort. Could you reassure me in any way on that, on the neighbourhood plan?
I'm not quite sure what Tim means by niche town. I think part of the quality of Exmouth is that it is a niche town. It's a bit different, certainly different to Exeter, and we get people who come here who say it's great to go around your shops, and we're all saying the shops should be better, but they like the nature of the shops. So we don't want to be a off the treadmill sort of, or off the production line sort of town. We want to retain the special nature of the place. It's part of the appeal of it. And above all, we need to celebrate, much more than I think we ever do, just what a brilliantly located place it is environmentally. I think the points that were being made at the very beginning of the meeting, and that's what came out most strongly. We all knew that we live in this lovely place, and you just look around 360 degrees, and each time you move another 20 degrees, there's something, if you're on the seafront, there's something significant, and you then include Woodbury Common and the estuary. It's just wonderful. But we were taken aback at the strength of view and clarity of view on the natural environment and protection of. And I think that the balance is to fulfill the vision which talks about aspiring to be developmental, to be 21st century, better shops, better pedestrianised areas, all that sort of thing that is detailed in the chapters, but to retain the character of Exmouth. But in some ways, I think the challenge of the next 5 or 10 years for the implementation is to develop that character. Because certainly, if I just speak of it personally, when we came back after just 10 years away in the 1990s, we were slightly shaken, and I talked to other people who had been away at the same time about what had happened to Exmouth in that period when the docks were closing and so on, and with the tremendous expansion of the town without commensurate improvements in the infrastructure. And that's the bit that I think the next 10 years will demonstrate whether we're a town that can become like that, or working with a vision, because this is a community vision, working in that way, working with the district council in particular, who have been supportive of everything we've done so far in terms of their support for the whole processing, which is quite complicated, of the neighbourhood plan. And the mere fact that we're actually in a building that is occupied by the district council, I think, ought to be a turning point for Exmouth. We had that turning point 5 years ago when the district council said we must pay more attention to Exmouth. 5, 7 years ago, it's our biggest town. We've got to keep on banging on about that and saying it's your biggest town, East Devon is brilliant, but you've got to make Exmouth better than it is. It's a great place, but it can be better still. I don't know if that really answers the point. It's a slightly philosophical point.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm sorry to be a little philosophical. I do think we have... I'd like to repeat what Steve has just said and thank everybody who's been involved, and I think all of us around the table have had some little involvement anyway. But thank you for that. I do think we face immense national challenges and wider challenges as well. And I think to keep our eyes on those kind of goals would be great.
Thank you. The introduction, I think, speaks for itself. Would only just want to underline paragraph 2, that it's the community's vision for the future sitting alongside the local plan. The plan is primarily concerned with land use, and we got advice from one of the few other large towns at that time that and this is partly in response to the points made by Ms. Okwe early on about the need for this to have happened 3 years ago. We wanted it to start 3 years earlier, but we were being told by government that we were too big. It's the usual problem that Exmouth's had, too big for some things, too small for other things. And the whole basis of neighbourhood planning nationally was on the assumption that it was nice little villages in East Devon and in the Cotswolds and so on, probably about 8,000 or 10,000. And we tried several times because the town council had been working with the community organisations, particularly through COLP, for about 5 years to actually develop a town plan, community plan, and had several runs at it. And it suddenly emerged that this would be the best way. And it then took us 2 years of pressing and pressing. We went to conferences, launching neighbourhood planning, once the government had decided it was important enough to pursue. We went to conferences and we pressed and pressed, and all the time, even right up till when we'd started, we were going to conferences that were addressed to villages of 5,000, 10,000 rather than big towns of 35,000, 40,000. Some of the advice we got from Winsford was they reckon this is in Cheshire, about 35,000 people. They said one of the best things we did was to allocate land for housing development. We didn't realise how important it was when we did it. We thought that's what we ought to be trying to do. But then when we, and this emerges in some detail later, when you actually get in to look at Exmouth, there isn't a lot of land that's available. Our document became more of a reflection of what people's wishes are for how the town should develop, rather than how land should be used, except to create more green spaces, to connect the green spaces and green corridors, and create this inverted commas
green town image, which may be too much of a niche idea, but we'll see. Or you might support that. Great, thanks. So that's for the enhancement that we're after. This is just on the first page. You know the degree of consultation we've gone to, and answer any questions on that that you want. And we pulled in expert witnesses. We had stakeholder meetings with groups, and we reported not only monthly to the town council, but to the community organisations liaison panel. So everybody has been, we think, kept as informed as they would wish to be, and maybe over-informed. What we then led to was the big consultation document, the CD as we call it, which was the open event, and I think you're familiar enough with that. Just on the final point about the what happens next, we've got this lengthy stage of consultation which will take us right through to the summer, a lot of it in the hands of the district council working through their processes. But time for the consultations and for a close review of what's being put in into it. And then, subject to successful outcome of the referendum, the final paragraph there is paragraph 14, which is about what we're calling, because it's quite a fun word, whether you want to call it that in the end, creation of an NPIG. Who would want to be going around saying I'm on the NPIG, but not to worry. The NPIG, the implementation group, will have the task of carrying things through over the next 10 years or so. But that is for something for discussion by the town council shortly. So that's just the introduction, Chairman.
Thank you.
I'll just add that we've tried to brighten up and clarify the maps, and we hope that that is a first much better map that you've got, which is just showing the town and the built-up boundary.
Any questions on that section? Right, okay. Thank you.
Well, the natural environment we deliberately put first because of the responses that we had on it. It is the most substantial chapter of all, and reflects views, a lot of extremely interesting views that came through from the Transition Exmouth group, who gave us a lot of the text for that. So in going through it, simply we'll go at a bit of a canter, otherwise we might be here longer than anybody would want to be. And I first start to pause when we get to the section, which is paragraph 8, green wedges. Yeah. And that's where we had to transition from a feeling that we got in the steering group that people wanted more valley parks and green wedges. But when we got in and we took that all on board, as it says at the top of the next page, where we list the Mare, the Marley area, northeast of Goodmoors, the Little to Mare Valley and Lower Halsden Farm. And the thought was, well, perhaps we'll have valley parks in all these places. When we got into it, as if you've read it closely, you'll see that we couldn't define them. We couldn't match the definition of green wedges by doing that. So we opened it out in a different way to saying how important those spaces are and how they could be developed in different ways to produce green spaces. Now, when we get into that, you'll see the first policy statements, policy EN1, and it's the things that are in green, and I'm sorry that somehow we weren't able to get a really light green colour, not easy to read in this light for me anyway, but those bits that are in highlighted green are the policy proposals that we will be putting forward. But if you're content with that and can move towards paragraph 12, you'll see there the example of how we've operated throughout, which is to say, let's clarify what the objective is. So you've got an objective to retain, conserve, and as appropriate replace woodlands and trees within existing and proposed developments, and to retain existing green spaces within the built-up area boundary. I've just finished the point then. And then three action points that are there. Now, Steve, do you want me to read out the policies? Is it almost illegible?
Yeah, no,
I'll just
ask a question.
Sure, okay, thanks.
It's just on what you were talking about, Roy, when you mentioned the retention of woodland and mature specimen trees either side of Dinning Way near St John's Road Junction. Have you taken into consideration, I know it comes under the district the county council's remit, but the Millennium Wood at the top of Dinning Way?
Which wood again?
Millennium Wood.
Millennium Wood.
It's not the old landfill.
Because there's 117 ash trees that have been
right.
built in
that
there.
Has not been, to my knowledge, specifically mentioned so far.
Is it too late?
Does anybody else in Brendan?
I did speak to Ian Cann about this, and he said it was identified as open space, and it would still, because it's in the ownership of the of Devon County, but it's on the forward plan to be made over to East Devon as open space. Yeah. I mean, at the moment, it's still contaminated land. It's methane still being flared off, but we planted in Millennium Year about 600 trees, and unfortunately, the contractors managed to tractor that take a lot of them out with the tractor, but we, since then we've identified those and they're now coming on and they've got a really good stock and we've added to that in over the years. I mean, there's 10 acres of land up there, so it's a substantial area. Unfortunately, the brambles have taken over. Since I came off of the county, we didn't have any money to keep it maintained. And it's got a bit wild with brambles, but I'm sure there is a way around that. It would be lovely if it could be incorporated in the plan and carried forward. And I did speak to the guy that gave the introduction the other night about Wild Exmouth.
Yeah.
And he's got the file on it at the moment, so I'll chivvy him up a bit. And maybe it could be, because it's there. I mean, it's such a shame not to use it. It just links in with the green corridors that you were saying through the Valley Park, and it's an ideal place up there, in you know, which is quite densely populated all around it. Thank you.
Yeah, I think, Chairman, it was just the title Millennium Wood that eluded me. Ian had brought it to our attention, and we've written it in, but I'll make sure that we identify it more clearly. With trees either side of Dinning Way, that's on paragraph 10. We've got a reference to it, but we'll strengthen the reference. And actually, just before coming out, I scribbled into the margins here, Wild Exmouth, because we're already in touch with Tim Daffron, who's doing that, and Transition Exmouth. We've already had him talking to them. So we've got good connections going, because a lot of this ties in. It's purpose designed for him to say, well, look, it's all there in the neighbourhood plan. We're saying exactly the same thing. Join up the green spaces, create green spaces. And as we say several times, it's not just a matter of creating them. It's a matter of maintaining them and improving them, and which is a challenge. Yeah.
Pauline?
I was going to say that it used to be the old rubbish dump. I've got a feeling that it's still got methane gas coming out of it, and that's why you can't let the public on there.
Still being burned off.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So the public wouldn't be allowed to use it. That's what I'm just saying.
Not yet.
I don't know how long you'll have to wait before the methane gas stops coming.
Okay.
Right, proceed.
So, thank you. It's some pace. So there's a substantial amount there, and when we get to the points about the New Valley Parks, we got into some very interesting discussions. There was great enthusiasm coming from the Avenues area, with Councillor Bruce Desarum in particular working with people there. And that's just one example of where there is energy waiting to be used into the future. Of people are saying, yes, we want to open that area so more visitors as well as residents will enjoy that the beauty of it, so that it will be protected from development. And we know what that's all about. There's bits of the BUAB that we know people want to build into, But there are ways in which that, we believe that kind of Valley Park can be developed in a way which is beneficial both to the landowners, and we've got to work with the landowners, and with the community. So that's one that we went into in quite some detail in writing up this section. But you'll see in the end, it's ended up as a, if I can point to action, NEA4, where we talk about the Exmouth community interests in decisions to be made about mitigating the damage to the estuaries, environmental qualities, and future enhancement and management of the valley parks and access to them. That's part, that will be one of the major tasks. And as those of you who saw the video will know, we've got Jan Ganaway, a one of several leading people who are wanting to contribute from the community. There's a lot of people very active in that field.
Just on the plans, on the Bampton Valley Park, you see the bit in yellow? Well, I think that's already there, where it's got proposed. I'm sure that's the bit that's... Because if that's Pound Lane going up the middle, I'm sure that bit goes all the way up there.
Well, we'll check that.
Just check
it.
Yeah, just one rather nitpicky point, Roy, there, on the flooding in the colony. That was actually autumn 1960, not winter. That was September the 30th and October the 6th. I remember very well.
We specify a number of areas where the people have said that these are the points where we think things should be improved. Everybody's saying the approach to the town, we need to get something right somehow. Marks and Spencer's is the first thing that people see. It's better than it might have been, but isn't there something artistic or stylish that we can somehow get? So that people, when they're coming in, they say, this is nice. The original idea we had was that we'd get a bridge going over the railway line so people would look at the estuary and they would say that was great, but that was unworkable in the end. But that's just a thought that the impact of approaching the town, we think, could be enhanced. And that would be in part be through following through the great idea in the master plan that's under review to have a really good public realm around the LED Sports Centre, Marks and Spencer's, and the railway station. That area, the public areas of it, not the immediate approaches, which are being improved, that whole area ought to be a lovely public realm with trees, seats. It's close to lovely views of the estuary, and it's where a lot of people go to park and then proceed into the town. If that could become a delightful public realm, that would be good. And similarly, the ideas for developing the parade, so it doesn't seem to be so dominated by furniture and levels that are appropriate for the cars, but isn't particularly friendly towards pedestrians. It's not a pleasant place to walk along the parade. That's not good for the shops or for the local people. And obviously, there's the Magnolia Centre, which featured very strongly in people's minds that I think the phrase that was used in paragraph 13, things that are parts of the town looking tired or in need of smartening up, that's the kind of thing that people say. And we did just pick on one area, and we hope that there'll be other areas of the town where people would say, hey, this is worse than it was 100 years ago. It was a brilliant place, Windsor Square. If you can envisage it as it must have been when it was built, until they put the police station in the middle of it, it's an absolutely beautiful square. Can something be done about that? I know Ken Turner was banging on about for about 10 years to get something done. But we came to the conclusion that if the town could identify areas like that and really work with it to say, let's just see what we can do with this to get it back to some of its former glory and appreciation of the quality of the architecture there, including the church, and to make it a public space area, and to make some affordable housing, whatever it might be, but to do it in such a way that it's something that Exmouth can be proud of. And people would say, you're lucky you live in Windsor Square, just as one example.
Lynn, please.
Thank you, Chairman. I only really wanted to say that I've had some representations from disability groups with the concern of the section about pedestrianisation. And certainly when we had discussions many years ago in this council concerning pedestrianisation of the Strand, that was one of the things they were concerned about then, was the people who are unable to walk, that do need their cars to be able to get into the town centre. and many discussions at that time, they certainly were around the fact that the original plans were going to be detrimental to disabled people that aren't able to get into the town. And I would just like to just highlight that the representations that have been made to me is simply that there doesn't seem to be anything in the neighbourhood plan concerning disabled people and access, as well as pedestrian access. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. John?
No, I just... Mr. Pryke was mentioning concerning the churches, but Christchurch in North Street is not on your list. And I think many, 100 years, over 100, it was a breakaway from the Church of England, and they're part of the United Reformed Episcopal Church of America. And it is a lovely building on the front.
Might be helpful if we knew how people that, who are concerned about that feel about the Strand as it is now. Has it gone far enough? You know, because that's a matter for the county and district councils to get right, isn't it? It's an automatic part of our thinking to say, well, what we're picking up with the problem of maintaining a balanced community. At the moment, Exmouth is pretty well balanced. It's about one-third what young people, one-third working people, and one-third older. But if you see some of the work that's been produced on how we're going, it's going to end up very different to that before very long. So it was an automatic thought on our part. The problem is that we are not offering enough local employment to attract enough people, apart from those who, mainly who are commuting to Exeter and maybe beyond for their work. That's people of working age. I do remember, he's now chief executive, isn't he, of the Exeter City Council, when he was planning officer, said that one of his final words were, when you do anything in Exmouth, you've got to make sure there's a job for every house. I don't think that has been happening. That was 10 years ago, so he said that. So it was a natural thing for us to look at economy and employment. But when we talked with East Devon District Council about the way it was shaping up, they said, that's interesting. Nobody else has had a section, had a chapter on it. But that underlines that we are different to most other places that have done neighbourhood plans. So we've inserted this section, and a lot of it is about the problem that we've got, and we mentioned it several times, that it's easy to sell residential property, and we're getting too many properties, including offices, that are being turned over to residential because they sell. And then you find, you talk to people who are wanting to set up businesses here, and they say there's no office accommodation available. And that was demonstrated years back with the Red Sea report by Devon County Council, which picked on Exmouth as a place that desperately needs office accommodation. That ties in then with the whole business of what kind of work do we want to have here. There are probably, I'm not high enough into or deeply enough into the economics of it, but there are logistical problems for Exmouth because of our location, which gives us our beautiful environment. But if you've got businesses that have logistical issues of getting lorries and freight and so on, then the A376 is a bit of a challenge for everybody else if they come down there as well. But the opportunity is there with modern technology, digital technology. As long as we can guarantee the fibre connectivity, that's another issue for district council, town council, MPs, and everybody to bang on about. I don't think it's that bad in Exmouth, but high quality fibre connectivity is crucial. If you get that, then you can get people coming to work, live and work. They want to live here, they want to have the fun of living here, And we demonstrated with the tail end of Royal College's activities, Royal Exmouth Limited, that there are people who want to come here who had previously been up in London, or even we had one come who'd been in San Francisco, in Silicon Valley, who said, what we want is a place that's by the sea so we can go and do our windsurfing and kite surfing. We don't need to be in the town, in a big city rather. And if you can get the right sort of accommodation, you'll find that people will come. So that's an issue that I know East Devon District Council officers, the Economic Development officers are into. But again, we've got to do that in such a way that it is not... doesn't change the character of Exmouth.
Brian?
Yes. With a view to trying to maintain or expand employment, would there be a need for some sort of strong policy to resist further development of retailing out of town? Liverton Business Park was originally an industrial estate, and it's now become a retail park. Do we need some policy to try to stop this happening on other industrial land?
I think the whole retail business is something that's very difficult to see exactly what's happening. I mean, the things that have happened to it in the last 2 years have been fantastic, haven't they, with the online shopping that's going on and the change for supermarkets who've stopped building their big supermarkets. But what the district council has been doing, and we didn't realise that when we started writing this, they have been resisting, for example, the old Glenorchy Churchland past Tesco's. They've been resisting that, which is designated for employment land, being turned over to residential for old folks' homes sort of thing. So there is an issue, I think, about how the Livermore places like that have developed, and I think that's for discussion with Clinton Devon Estates, probably as to whether it's going in the direction that they want. I mean, I've not got into the detail of it, but I know that they've been concerned about, you know, taking the next steps, because people are not going out there, and I know of people who've gone out there and then said, we don't like being out on an industrial estate. We'd come and have a smaller office in town. That's the way we want to do our work. But there are businesses up there which actually I think the town benefits from by having digital companies up there, and certainly the tyre replacement companies and things like that, tyre specialists, things I know of. Just come as a bit surprised that when there's such a successful pet shop up there, I'd have thought that's people would go to those in town. But in the end, the businesses have to decide where they can work, and that's we've put in a section in this about the incentives that could be given to businesses to come and establish themselves in town. Not sure quite where it is now. Yes, I think it's paragraph 7. Challenge is to provide the right commercial land and premises offer and then persuade firms that Exmouth is a place to come to for them to relocate and invest in. And then there's a couple of possibilities there. Should we give consideration by the landowners and the local authority to offering economic incentives to get people to come down to where we want them to come to? And then whether we can do rent-free periods and for them when they start up. That's what people do in other parts of the country, apparently. I think that's an issue that requires quite a deep study by people much more sophisticated about locating businesses than I am.
Christine?
Hi, Roy. Very good to see within the plan the links through to economy and employment. I think it's an essential component of a local plan. I think many of us would agree that one of the greatest things that we assets that we have as a town is the people that live here. And if we can combine that thought with the fact that within our town we have one of the largest secondary schools in the country, I would be very keen to see some reference within the plan for employment and development opportunities for those young people as they leave school. A large proportion of our young people move into further education in the city of Exeter. That's a very natural progression. However, a lot of them are keen to live and stay and work within Exmouth. Exmouth regularly features within the top 10 towns in Devon for the numbers of young people not in employment, education or training. And I think it's a real initiative that we should be mindful of and concentrate our efforts upon for the future development of the town. Thank you.
Pauline?
I was just going to say this was really put in here to preserve our employment land, because we're finding that a lot of our employment land is actually being gobbled up with housing. And in the end, we won't have any flat employment land. Unfortunately, in Exmouth, we're quite hilly, and so therefore the employment land that we have got left, because you'll find that Pankhurst is gone, the old Danby and X-Bank site is gone for housing, that they're all being gobbled up with housing. And so there won't be one job per house. And so this is why we try to put it in here, to try and hold that land, for especially for employment.
Thank you. Yes, on the employment and pride. Sorry, Roy. Sorry. I do apologise. Is it possible that you could word it a bit stronger, that it's vitally important that we do maintain the employment land that we've got? Because if we lose the two that I'm thinking of at the moment, I don't know where we're going to go for employment land. And obviously, we're not going to get the big factories back like we used to have when a lot of us were children. But, I mean, when we were talking about Royal College, we were looking for those sorts of units for start-up units for people. And that's what I'm thinking of. You know, like, as you say, where the Glenorchy Tesco site is, and obviously the site next door to it. But I think it's important, if it is possible for you to do, to say that it's imperative that we keep, you know, our designated employment sites at present, and it should not at all be used for housing. Thank you.
Well, that's certainly, Chairman, the spirit we've tried to get in, and I'll check the wording to see whether we can strengthen it, perhaps in policy E1. Just slipping back to the point that Christine was making there, we do have in paragraph 6 a reference to the community college. If I may, through you, Chair, ask that, with her expertise, if she could just give us a couple of sentences that we may consider putting in, because it's a connection we want to make, and especially with the community college in moving into a new era, we're wanting to go and talk with them before the referendum to get the young people warmed up to the idea of saying to their parents, you are going to vote, aren't you, and that sort of thing, that we will want to get that point over to them. That's good.
Less than one side of A4, please, Christine. Thank you very much, Brian. Just to say, we had a planning meeting before this meeting, and there were a couple of applications in there which were for conversion of properties above shops from office or storage space for businesses into flats. So I don't know whether there's any view on that at all, because obviously the town centre is possibly a hub for employment, if you like, and whether that's a good thing or not.
Well, my only response would be, it's one of those things where you've got to find the balance. If there is space, and there probably is quite a bit of space above shops that is not particularly well used, and it can be turned into a flat for somebody, that's great, because you get more footfall in the town's livelier and so on. But it is the problem of residential taking over from existing offices, and we've written in as strongly as we can the point that should only happen if it's been demonstrated that it can't be sold on the market. Yeah.
Jeff, you want to raise a point?
Roy, just on paragraph 12, with regards to the visitor surveys, could we also add in we've got too many dogs, but could we also add too many horses as well of late? It has of late started to become a bit of a nuisance.
Well, I have to say, Chairman, that nobody actually wrote that into the comments. I have had a personal reaction like that when I've been walking on the beach and thought, what are they doing charging towards me? But nobody's actually written it in, the horses bit. So, you know, we're supposed to reflect what people have said from the town that way. But
I'll get the resident to phone you.
Yeah, the only affordable housing for many people is not even rented accommodation, because that for some people is quite high. I would push for putting the accent on council housing, where you've got guaranteed rents and you've got guaranteed quality. But then one would have to resist or try to turn back this nonsense of selling off council houses. I think that needs to be stopped somehow.
Thank you, Chair. I'm looking to Pauline here now. We were both at EDDC's cabinet last week, wasn't it? When the issue of bedroom sizes came up, and we're finding that bedrooms are becoming smaller and smaller. And I appreciate that the government are putting out a consultation document or something along those lines, but it was felt, and I'm sure Pauline will have something to say, that it would be helpful if we could have in the plan a minimum size of a bedroom as per social housing for East Devon District Council. But I mean, Pauline knows more about that than me.
Sorry if I can. That is true, because a lot of these properties now that they're putting up, when you call a single room, you can get a bed in, but not even a full size bed. So if somebody who's 6 foot six can't even get into that bed because the bed won't go in there. I mean, it really, I know you'd have no problem with it. You know, that is bad. But just to answer Brian's question, we are buying council house, we're buying are the new stock or old council houses back as a council, East Devoners, and we're 11 up on our stock at the moment, so keep your fingers crossed.
Been saying in terms of we had a group meeting on Friday and Steve brought up the issue of the bedroom size, and a point that I made was that some 4 or 5 years ago there was a planning application in Woodville Road where I happen to live, and that went through to the inspector, and the inspector actually made the point to East Devon and said, shouldn't you be looking at minimum room sizes? And I'm not quite sure where that actually went after that.
Perhaps it's a maximum.
Yeah, thank you. Roy, I'm just a little bit confused in terms of Power 11, which is highlighting a need to have 25% affordable homes, residential development more than 10 units, but the policy has come out to said that's down to 4 units. Is that an error, or is that because you're specifying 4 units or above in the BUAB? I think 11 has specified your policy as 10, but you're... Well, I think if you try to enforce 4 properties or above, you'd probably get very little response from builders there, but...
Yes, we had...
Right.
We did get some advice that it was worth pushing it to say everywhere. That particular was to underline how important it is that we get affordable housing, that people are not getting away with it. So, the old business are just moving 14 flats.
And, yeah.
So, so that's the reason why we went for that. It may well be that the district council planning officers will come back at us and say that isn't going to be feasible. But we felt it so strongly.
Okay, so does Power 11 need to be amended to 4 then, just for clarification or continuity?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm happy with the more robust challenge, but I think it's just continuity, consistency.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, sir. Sorry, the 10 is
right, okay. Right. Thank you.
Because the trouble is, what we're having with planners is the fact that they get their planning permission passed and they have to put in 25% affordable houses. And then they're coming back to the local authority and say it's not viable. And
yeah,
it has to go to the district valuer. And often they get let off with doing less. Because it depends what the district valuer actually says. And so this is trying to stop that in a funny way. We're trying to hold the fort, if you like. And say if you can't afford it, then shouldn't put it in the beginning.
No, I understand the point. I'm happy. I think I just wanted a clarification on the difference in the numbers. I mean, I think that if we're going to go for a robust challenge of 4, let's be clear and just just word it slightly different.
Yeah.
I think we'll get a fair amount of pushback on that, but let's see how it goes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Let's move on to getting about now.
I think we only need to look to Exeter to find out that this is a challenging issue, and this has become a more substantial part of the report than we anticipated initially. We started off by saying whatever happens, don't let's become like Weston-super-Mare. May have improved by now, but certainly they were in difficulties. And the whole point about this is trying to avoid an even worse situation with the EA376, which seems to get worse week by week. I'm astonished that it seems to be an all-day traffic jam now there, or heavy flow of traffic. And to get people back on, or more people using the public transport. That's not an easy thing to do, partly because when they get to Exeter, they still have problems getting where they want to get if they've gone in by train or bus. But that is a wider issue that we come to in the getting about issues. Basically, what we're saying and what people are saying is it's not bad at the moment, But it could get a lot worse, and you only need to see what happens on a bank holiday, or just when you get one car breakdown on the 376, or a wide load going through, and it's we're getting a vision of what the future will be in that way. What we say in paragraph two, we'd want to underline, if we don't take the opportunity now, the anticipated increase in residents, we're going to get a say about a 10 to 15% increase over the next few years, and the increasing number of visitors as people holiday here in the UK more than abroad, if that's one of the outcomes we're expecting in the next few years, we're going to get worse transport problems. And we see too often, just during an ordinary day, the kind of problems there are around Imperial Road, Manchester Road, and the roundabout there. These things need to be looked at in a way that anticipates the problems rather than realise in the end that something needs to be done about them. I don't know if people want to come in now, or shall I? Yeah. Yeah, sure, not until that point. No, it's, shall I? Okay, well, can you correct it?
Paragraph 19 on community transport, it says a vital organisation has a member of the community cannot afford to that. That is not true.
Right.
We can't put that in because we've actually, we have to ensure that we are not competing with taxes. The community transport is not allowed to compete with taxes.
Right.
So we can't say more taxes.
Simply. We'll get into trouble if we leave it in. So we delete who cannot afford taxes.
Yeah.
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 And say who aren't. Thanks.
Well, not able to use it. I mean, whether you write that slightly different, in which case I'll send you some wording.
Or if you send something through, it would be great.
Yeah, it certainly can't be written as.
Thank you. It's very helpful. Thanks. I think I would just want to underline under the rail section. The things are already happening in paragraph 8, where the Great Western Railways are looking to get more integrated train and bus services. I mean, it seems a nonsense that when other parts of Europe have got coordinated transport arrangements where trains arrive just at the right time for people to get on the bus and vice versa, we don't do things like that. So at least they're saying they're doing that. And I don't know quite where the DCC's Devon Metro scheme is up to, but it is pretty important that Exmouth is seen as a significant part of that. I mean, 1 million passengers, that's the paying passengers last time it was checked, a year on the branch line, suggests that it is a very significant part of the local transport arrangements. So there are things that are pointing in the right direction, but we're saying as a town that we ought to be saying, look, we're so lucky to actually have a train station, for a start, because go along the coastline, there are remarkably few of them. Secondly, that the train station is right where the buses used to be, and right at the town centre. So everything is there, if only we can make it just work a bit more smoothly. And we're not suggesting that there should be a whizzo sort of multi-million pound building of any kind, just integrated planning between the county council, district council, and town council. And this is already in the local plan anyway, it's referred to there, that it's part of the local plan to actually encourage greater use of public transport under Strategy 22, upgrading a public transport provision to and from Exeter, primarily through the provision of an integrated transport interchange. So that's one thing I'd want to underline.
Tim would like to come in on
sure.
that.
Yeah.
Well, just to add really, Roy, to what you were saying about the current state of the Devon Metro. Mm-hmm. As my understanding of that idea of the half-hourly service from Exmouth through to Paignton via Exeter, that will come into action with later this year timetable, as I understand it. Whether they will brand it Devon Metro then, I'm not sure. Jeff may know a bit more as county councillor. But one of the things I, you know, a personal feeling. I mean, I think the current situation of having one Barnstaple train and one Paignton train an hour is quite a nice situation, and we've got through connections to various places. But that's going, and we're going to be, you know. The other thing to say about rail is, for a long, long time, we have been one of the busiest branch lines in the whole country. And so it is no surprise that we've actually retained that. But what I'd like to say is, I mentioned national challenges when I spoke at the beginning of the meeting. One of the things I'm thinking of is this fragmentation in public transport that doesn't help matters at all when you've got, you know, three bus companies operating in town. You've got another company, which is a major rival of the major bus company here. And that whole idea of integrated transport is, you know, I love it, and I'm working as chair of Exmouth Transport Partnership to help that whole idea along. And there's a group, as you know, under the chairmanship of Roma Patton, who is trying to develop a business plan for such an interchange. So that is going ahead.
I think Exeter is worse than us because they have the problem. The train service from Exmouth is fantastic once you get into St David's, but it's when people needing to get a bus or a coach, there is no infrastructure around St David's or Central, and they have to walk miles. So it's Exeter is the problem.
So moving through to community transport, where we've already had reference and taking that point. Again, paragraph 30, it would be lovely if we could say anything different. I don't know if anybody on the town council can, or maybe county council, could say that it isn't as bad as it sounds, but paragraph 30, Devon County Council stated the road will not be widened or upgraded. If that's the fixed position, then I think we really do have to think very seriously about how we can find a way of not having everybody using that road. It's just going to become impossible.
That basically comes back to the interchange facilities. So we understand that we've lost areas because of Marks and Sparks. We've now got the bus stops close between the two zebra crossings and also the underpass. So I understand that the interchange does need to work a bit better between the railway and the bus, but I'm not quite sure how the commercial side can affect what we're doing here.
As I understand it, the commercial problem is that Stagecoach feel it's not worthwhile doing the wiggle round the back to park at the station, which certainly visitors, and you'd think that residents would welcome if there was a bus waiting for them when they get off the train, and that they actually just can have a quick dash without dragging their cases and that sort of thing. It's just that the potential is there. It looks as though there should be a solution. And in all the discussions that have been going on for at least 5 years with the District Council strongly supporting the idea, the Town Council's, Lisa's predecessors have strongly supported the idea, and it just gets blocked somewhere in Devon County Council, and it does not, and we've never had a clear argument put back which says, no, you can't possibly do that, apart from Stagecoach, and it's back to Councillor Dumper's point, that they seem to be able to do what they want to do rather than do something that is for the public benefit. And I don't know how many people here regularly use the trains, but the times that we use the trains, you do see people who are arriving as visitors, and the first thing they do is they say, where's the bus? And then you say, well, go down there, and then it's in that congested part of town, which is, you've got cyclists, you've got people going to the sports centre. It's a very busy area and lots of cars there. it would be a good idea if you could siphon off the people who are wanting to go on the buses by the bus being at the station. And I just think that if we were in a more dirigist sort of country, that somebody from government would be saying, come on, sort this nonsense out, make sure the buses are based just behind, that there is a proper stop there, and that the road structure is redesigned for it. That's a quite a deep, long argument that quite a few people have been engaged in for years.
But you, same issue in Exeter?
Exactly, and that's what we don't want to do. Nightmare.
Sorry, Roy, can I just go back to number 9 on the buses? Would it be possible, and I'm looking to Lisa, our town clerk, to make sure I'm saying it is correct what I'm going to say. Where you've got, Exmouth also benefits from town services, which include evenings and weekends. Can we put a positive statement in there that Exmouth Town Council, to a certain degree, subsidises the 99E, which goes right out to Litlam at night times? Because that is an important link. I'm not sure whether or not if Town Council didn't put in the money that they did, whether it would actually run.
It does run. I can answer that. The bus does run.
I'll pick that up with Roy outside the meeting.
That bus supports Litlam, Brixington, Holston, Withycombe.
That's one again. Thanks very much. That's that the town council may want to pursue with particular interest.
Lynn, would you like to come in on that?
Yeah, I've just got 2 points really. Firstly, the research and also the statistics for the last 12 months show that the GP surgeries at the present time, a lot of them are 50% under over capacity. You know, that they need 50% more space, the existing GP surgeries. So that is part of what I would say, where it says existing healthcare facilities are retained. In fact, they're going to need far more space anyway at the moment for the existing population. The second thing that concerns me was just that your objective where it says, the second objective, hasn't got a page number, has it, in 18, where it says Exmouth is the largest town, then it says Exmouth Hospital should not only be retained to provide inpatient and outpatient services, and then goes on. It's already been recognised that in the next 10 years, Exmouth Hospital may not be an appropriate building. They may have to, because it they may not be able to modernise it such in the next 10 years to take the sufficient number of people. Yes, we want, I certainly want inpatient beds and outpatient services and increase them. But the problem is you can't expand any more on that site. I'm just wondering whether rather than Exmouth Hospital, you need to say something like an Exmouth Hospital or somehow quantify it, that I wouldn't like it to somebody in 5 years' time to say that you put in the neighbourhood plan that you want Exmouth Hospital retained and we need it moved to Goodmalls or Liverton or somewhere to get a modern hospital with a modern GP surgery. And you've actually said in your document that you're not happy to have a new hospital.
Right.
Because it's more important that Exmouth retains a hospital with inpatient beds and without patient services.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't like someone to turn around and say we can't have it there, so you've said you don't want one. Because we more than need one in Exmouth.
I agree. Were that to say the Exmouth Hospital, the small age services, should not only, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, because we definitely need them to be retained. But I'm just concerned that, you know, I know, you know, from personal experience that, you know, it's going to be a problem to increase the size and modernise what we have. And I wouldn't like in 10 years' time someone to say, well, you didn't say you wanted it somewhere else or something. Well, or whatever, as long as we don't get tongue-tied, you know, we don't get tied down to saying we only want this Exmouth Hospital, in case it doesn't fit the purpose for the future.
It's more around health services, isn't it?
Yes,
rather than
it is.
Bricks and mortar.
It is.
So the point that emerged from the discussions we had was, first of all, whether there needs to be a surgery up at Brixington, because there is an offshoot, an outpost surgery there, but whether that's substantial enough, partly the point that Lynn's just made, and then the issue came up about we wouldn't get a hub, a well-being hub, because Budleigh Salterton's got one, and there's some sort of national policy that. You've got to have 150,000 population, you can only have one. Well, those sort of things are there for us to battle against, I think, and because the potential of developing something perhaps associated with the leisure centre, with the building areas that there are there, where there are existing buildings that could be revamped, I know it's a long-term possibility, and then making use of the wonderful estuary area to encourage people to go out and do the exercises they've just been told to do in the doctor's surgery and all that, that Exmouth's got the potential down, I would suggest, down near the Imperial Recreation Ground, combined with Brixington developments, if there's a particular demand up there, to cope with it. I know these are NHS businesses, very complicated and difficult at the moment, but that's, again, just the kind of things we felt were reflecting what people were saying.
Jerry?
On Goodmore's Farm, the one thing we requested was a medical facility, presumably an annex to the hospital maybe, or another doctor's surgery, because another 350 homes up there without any, well, only one doctor's surgery close by. We thought it was nothing, but when Mr. Fowler put in for his application, Devon County Council automatically wiped all that out that we'd required or had stated we wanted and put in a primary school without doing their homework when we protested. So I think Lynn is quite right. We need to strongly word it that we need extra hospital provision or like an annex to the original hospital and things like that. Yeah, or a medical centre.
Yeah, the problem with all of these infrastructure things is we're always playing catch-up. We're never prepared. We've got to try and later address the problem that whatever it is that has caused it. We need some sort of policy that we can include in planning that would include, when we're talking about a planning development, we're just talking about the site that we're talking about. We don't talk much, or we don't seem to be able to talk much about the impact it has on the rest of the town. Now, this would need some sort of national policy, I think, to address that particular problem, that developers must take on board the effects that they have on the rest of the town when they're developing. Very difficult if you're building a couple of houses, but when you're building a large estate, those considerations are taken into account, but they're never fully worked out. We haven't got the implications of yet what Plum Park's going to do to the town when it's built, have we? So we're always playing catch-up.
It's really annoying, but we've called the NHS to account several times in planning. They do have a chance to say if it's going to affect their services, and they never come up. We've had them at East Devon before, and we've challenged them on why, if they're in their services are in dire straits, why don't they put in on a big planning application, why don't they come forward and say, we cannot facilitate all these people coming into Exmouth? And they don't. They sit there and they say, oh, yes. And then when the planning application comes up, there's nothing from NHS, so therefore we can't do anything. And that's the trouble. There is nobody, and it's trying to tap somebody down in the NHS that has the guts, if you like, to come forward and say, I'm sorry, but we cannot facilitate all these people coming into this development. And until we get that, we're stuffed.
I just wanted to add to what Lynn had said, really, because I think she made a specific point about health, which could have been made for the whole thing, that sometimes we're going to need to say, well, this needs development or that. And I was just going to ask you, Roy, whether you'd got a date for your review. You were talking about like a mid-term review of the neighbourhood plan or something of that, as I understood. You were saying that, weren't you?
Yeah, my anticipation would be that once this gets through and adopted, that there'll be a 4 or 5 year period of really hard work for the town to work out how it's going to manage the aspirations and the policy proposals that are here and to actually start work on them. But I'll say in quite a few areas, there's already initiatives, Wild Exmouth is just one little example, that are going in that direction, and that there are energy bubbles around the town. People who, once they know there's a specific project, they don't want to get involved in all the strategic discussions about things. But once they know this is what is going to be done, be it green spaces or working on a particular area to beautify it in whichever way, that there'll be people who will want to get it behind it. And in the development of the Little Mare Valley area, there'll be people really itching to do that. But what I was mentioning in my opening comments was that this will last through, this neighbourhood plan lasts to 2031. My guess is that by 2026, 27, the town council, prompted by NPIG, if that's what it's called, will be saying, well, how far have we got with the neighbourhood plan so far? And what are we going to be saying we want in the next local plan to make sure that the first neighbourhood plan is delivered, and what's the second neighbourhood plan going to look like? That makes the assumption that there's a will across the country, because it's government policy, as well as locally, to actually have the community engaged in that way. And that, I was
suggest is the best future that there could be, is that engagement continues.
Can we move on?
Yep, okay.
We've got a few items left. It's approaching 9 o'clock. I'd like to finish as soon as we can at 9.
Okay, start to gallop a bit then. Under town assets, paragraph 25, just to point out that we had quite a dilemma about that. The whole business of the unusual development of Exmouth, that almost everything is down in the town centre, but the town centre isn't the town centre. And all the development of Brixington and so on and beyond or around there so makes it difficult. So we, after quite a few deliberations, came to that view that's in paragraph 25, given that so many of the facilities, the community facilities, that long list that's on paragraph 25, are at the town centre. The only sensible thing seems to be to build on that, but to make sure that there are parking arrangements, all ties together, doesn't it? Transport arrangements, so that people who live further away from the town centre do not feel that they are not able to get in to enjoy the facilities that there are. In paragraph 26, we highlight a point that, again, it would be great if the town council could say, look, we really do need a place, particularly for the arts, you know, an Exmouth town hall, not town hall, that's the wrong phrase for it, arts and civic development centre or something like that, whatever you want to call it, dependent on what issues you want to address. We demonstrated at Roll that there's a real demand for that and there's great arts activities go on, but it's wider than that. It's engaging the community in various ways. And at the moment, it seems it doesn't have that centralised sense to the town, which we think would make a big difference to it. Churches Together are with us on that. I'm not going to mention toilets as the final thing I say. It's clear enough what the issues are there, highly importantly. But there's just a very nice one right at the very end about the allotments. And it's one of the town council's mega responsibilities is looking after the allotments. You've got the second largest allotments association in the country. And it was the first allotments, you know, it's paragraph 39. The first allotments in the country were in Exmouth. Let's make the most of that, and we're suggesting ways in which, for the future, there should be pressure on housing developments to actually allow space. I think there's something happening up at Plum Park in that direction to give people access to allotments. That, Chairman, is...
Thank you very much, Roy. Yeah. Thank you for your time, and to you, councillors, for your time. Now, could we have a proposal, please, to endorse the draft neighbourhood plan before it proceeds to the pre-submission consultation? Somebody like to propose that? Thank you, Steve. Second? Thank you, Rob. All those in favour? It has the endorsement. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for your time.